Welcome to the first podcast in this open source democracy project. Here we investigate why open source is important for democracy and the ethics and values of European alternatives to US big tech. We are Renee Ridgway, researcher of the Department of Digital Design and Information Studies at Aarhus University and part of the SHAPE Center, Shaping Digital Citizenship. She will be the main expert source in this series. I am Pernille Tranberg, a journalist specialized in data and AI ethics. I will be your producer and host. In this podcast, we will zoom in to what is open source, the history of open source, and why it is so important. And we'll give you a lot of examples of open source services. All links will be in the show notes. Welcome, Renee.
Thanks, Pernille.
Renee, to begin with, What is open source?
Well, the term open source usually refers to source code that is freely available for modification and redistribution.
What is your recent research on open source?
Well, the past years, I have been interviewing experts, computer programmers, self-defining geeks, and also awardees from the NGI, Next Generation Internet Search Project, where I worked as a postdoc, to find out its history and the contemporary condition. So this is for my book chapter entitled From Free Software to Open Source, Traversing the Values and Ethics of an Open Knowledge Infrastructure. And that'll be published coming months in Politics of Open Infrastructures with Open Book Publishers. And that's an English press that supports open knowledge and accessibility. And I'm also one of the co-editors.
Well, I've been so fortunate to having read this paper. It's very good. It also tells a lot about the history of open source, so maybe you can tell us about that. When did it all start? I also read in the chapter that you mentioned that Bill Gates called it piracy in 1975.
Yeah, well, I'll try to be brief, but the story goes something like this. There was this thing called free software, which is open, meaning so not proprietary. And free software was imminent to nascent computer science departments worldwide. And then simultaneously, free software embodied a politics of liberalism, with its roots anchored in the Unix operating system, situated within the hybrids like academic corporate culture of Bell Labs. And they were critical of software development by corporations, organizations, or consultancies. Yet there were other groups of users. In 1975, Microsoft's Bill Gates, because he was already working for Microsoft at that time, with his infamous open letter to hobbyists that free software was responsible for the piracy problem. And he complained about the sharing of software between hobbyists as it was distributed in numerous hobby magazines that hobbyists were reading.
Mm-hmm. But there's free software. And then there's free open source software. What's the difference? And where does Richard Stallman come into this picture?
Yeah. So Stallman was working at one of these universities, MIT, and his conception of free software was a pushback against the piracy problem, as he was against proprietary software hoarding. So eventually these values and politics took form in the acronym FLOSS, so F-L-O-S-S. So articulated by Stallman with this L signifying libre, that translated as free, but not free beer, but free speech. So this stood for the free flows of information, so it holds no position on economic flows.
Okay, so we have FLOSS, but we also have Linux, which I've heard a lot about. That's also an open source operating system, right?
Yeah, and that's, so in 1991, a Finnish computer scientist student, his name was Linus Torvalds, developed and maintained this small kernel that could run alongside free software tools. And he was doing this on his personal computer at home. And this came to be known as Linux. This operating system eventually served as the first material bridge. So between these institutional computing infrastructures, such as those at MIT, where Stallman was located, and the personal computing world of IBM back then.
Okay. So when did the term open source then appear?
During the dot-com boom, the usage of the term free software became a governing force, even with like online startups at that time. Amazon, Yahoo, but they incorporated a pragmatic approach to saving costs. And this was promoted by the evangelism of the libertarian pro-business hacker Eric Raymond. And it was at the Linux Congress in 1997 that Raymond developed his lecture, The Cathedral and the Bazaar. And this described the experimentation with free software, which according to him was the bazaar, and its applications, methods, and adoption by industry, which he called the cathedral. Simultaneously in 1997, Tim O'Reilly was publishing handbooks for free software, and he organized the Free Software Summit Congress, but Stallman wasn't invited. And it was here that Raymond first suggested using the term open source. So even though Raymond receives most of the credit for its origins, the term open source was coined by a woman, the forecaster Christine Peterson, although some people have told me that the term was previously in use by the CIA to refer to unclassified sources of intelligence.
Very interesting. So open source is very often praised as something opposite of commercial. In Europe, we really, really like open source as opposed to, you know, big tech closed silos, in transparent silos. Can you explain that?
Yeah. Well, in 1997, another figure, Bruce Perens, published the first manifesto of open source, the Debian Free Software Guidelines, so DFSG, and together with Raymond, co-founded the Open Source Initiative in 1998. At the same time, Raymond was focused on the rise of the internet economy and making free software into something that made more sense to investors, venture capitalists, and the stock-buying public. So there was this shift from Stallman's L for libre, or free, as in information and speech, in order for it to better appeal to corporate partners.
And how does this differ from free software?
Well, so derived from the Debian free software guidelines, the open source definition, right, was published. And because of this, Stallman decided there was a need to differentiate this from his own four freedoms for free software. And these are, and he begins with a zero, freedom zero, the freedom to run the program as you wish for any purpose. Freedom one is the freedom to study how the program works and change it so it does your computing as you wish. Freedom two is the freedom to redistribute copies so you can help others. And freedom three is to distribute copies of your modified versions to others.
And they aren't the same thing?
Well, yes, but according to some, and then others not. So when the dot-com bubble burst, the free software movement became affected by economic factors, and it morphed into many things. A problem, a danger, a job, a calling, a dogma, a solution, a philosophy, a liberation, a methodology, a business plan, a success, and an alternative. And this is according to the anthropologist Chris Kelty, and his 2008 book, Two Bits, The Cultural Significance of Free Software, shows how what he calls the movement constantly argued and discussed free software. And this encompassed the practices of talking about its meaning and the necessity of the four other practices, which are sharing source code, conceptualizing openness, applying licenses, and the practice of coordination and collaboration. So based on the differences, subsequently, this movement became polarized and heated, and free software forked into open source.
Renee, in the chapter you have excerpts from the interviewees, and they seem to consciously choose to use the term open source, whilst others stick to FOSS or FLOSS. We need to get an idea about the terms here.
Yeah, it's kind of complicated, but my findings go, let's say, beyond this critique of open source as a solution to proprietary software and copyleft ideology. Through these interviews, I learned that how certain people have divergent values. And in this way, I show how they are, for some, the same, these values, on a technical level, but they differ on an ethical level.
Today, FOSS and open source is the same. One of your informants, as you call them, said the following: there's no difference between open source and FLOSS from a user perspective. Another insisted on using the term FLOSS or open source interchangeably, whilst two informants highlighted FLOSS as being an infrastructure for interoperability of software projects.
Yeah, well, so at this same juncture, right, people use FLOSS, FOSS, and open source interchangeably. But what all of them actually mentioned was a crucial infrastructure, and that's the Linux operating system, which is a community-based project and has a GPL license. And this GPL license, which, like, according to Wikipedia, is the GNU General Public License, and are a series of widely used free software licenses, or copyleft licenses, that guarantee end users the freedom to run, study, share, or modify the software. The GPL was the first copyleft license available for general use. It was originally written by Richard Stallman, the founder of the Free Software Foundation, and this license grants the recipients of a computer program the rights of the free software definition that we mentioned previously. And it is used as a mainstay for large and enterprise infrastructures all over the world with open source code, the Linux operating system. And so one informant emphasized what's important about this type of open licensing is that they're able then to look at the code.
What about this value of openness? It seems that degrees of openness are implicit in both terms, open source and FLOSS. However, one informant was hesitant to apply the term openness to either FLOSS or open source, highlighting the problematics that this term is tricky because there's now open washing, which we'll deal with in another podcast. So calling everything open is a trend, as with the company OpenAI, which uses misleading language. This really rings true with my research on data ethics and AI.
Yeah. And another informant did point out that instead of giving power, right, to companies like OpenAI to control, you know, these power structures, they said that that's where FLOSS comes in, because it captures autonomy and transparency to make these power structures on the side of the people, so not the corporations.
What I also found interesting is that even if people don't have the same ethics or values, they need to cooperate.
Yeah. Another foreman emphasized, sometimes you just can't instantly be open about everything. They said something like, as a shareholder, you get it when it's made open, but not every step of the way. However, they continued by adding that both FLOSS or open source software require people, so in this case programmers, to be, and I quote, open, free, and transparent. Even if you don't like them, if their code is valid, then there needs to be a way to work with people in an open way.
One informant evoked the Holy Trinity, use, contribute, and maintain. Common lingo in FLOSS and open source circles to denote that within communities, the opposite is the lurker. The idea is to convert the lurker into a contributor.
Yeah. But yes, but under certain conditions. So some people just want to interact, maintain the code, and remain invisible. But with both FLOSS and open source, outsiders have to become familiar with the code. So it becomes learned as a part of membership, as a community of practice. Yet they contribute silently. Another informant articulated this as the understanding the importance of membership, which is running FLOSS communities and reigning in awareness. Whereas for someone else, it is about passion, people, community, and the way we can build a digital society. People together with FLOSS is a way to get there.
This one is very funny. They recounted the competition between the two as an uneven boxing match, where at one conference they attended, everyone who wanted to make big money was the open source corner, and the people who wanted to build for the community were in the other corner.
Yes, he's clearly a FLOSS advocate. For another, the line has been reinforced recently when they stated that, I quote, I've done a fair amount of contributions, working for free for Google, Facebook, they feed us horrible politics.
Also, big tech companies use open source, don't they?
Yeah, and it is well known and often mentioned, big tech builds on open source code and then makes its products and services proprietary. And another informant portrayed open source as being about taking care of business and locking you into the product, or describing how big business is built on free software. For them, the open source way is like reinventing the wheel. The core is open source, but stock management invoicing is proprietary. So it is open, but there is still a business model attached to it.
Renee, you also asked informants specifically if they think of FLOSS, or as I would call it, open source, as an open infrastructure.
Yes, and one informant actually specified that as an infrastructure, open source is about pragmatic methodology, and that free software is like philosophy or a political ideology. Whereas then another declared that OSS, so open source software, became the pragmatic business term because they, referring to the coders, wanted to step away from the politics, which is then FLOSS. And then another informant depicted the shift in terminology from FLOSS to open source as a winding road of forked paths, where open source meets its own incongruency as things made messy by humans who build it together.
Transparency and openness and sharing code are some of the values mentioned so far. I found this quote really telling about embodied ethics. FLOSS and open source are the same thing because they operate as an ethos of a gift economy. I wanted to give and protect my gift. I wanted no one to claim ownership of something. Giving and sharing empowers people. And there's actually a lot of power into giving something for free. It attracts people.
Yeah. It's nice. It's nice and poetic as well. However, differences surfaced, and these were pointed out when it came to their politics. One informant formulated their thoughts this way. For them, it's about ethics. Is it about giving up authorship? No. Floss is altruism. And another stated, lots of them stated, that floss is a commons or a public good, and that floss needs to be protected from corporate encroachment.
Please tell us a bit more about some of the ethics and values of free software. Sharing source code, conceptualizing openness, applying licenses, and the practice of coordination and collaboration, which was embodied by the movement, right?
Yeah. Another value that repeatedly surfaced is the word sustainability. And I think one informant pointed out the fact that sustainability and viability is now a big conversation in the open source community. Another referenced Bruno Latour's quote, "Technology is society made durable," in regard to open source software. And as STS scholars, so science and technology studies scholars, Starr and Ruhleder put forth in 1996, working infrastructures are becoming visible upon breakdown. And 30 years later, breakdowns and blackouts, as we know, still occur with infrastructures, yet it seems that it's not sustainability, but maintainability. Because, one informant put it this way, sustainability is not guaranteeing sustainability. We need to have a future. And another backed this up by declaring that everyone wants to invent the wheel, but they don't want to maintain it. So recognizing the necessity of their role, because along with developers, maintainers are really important. And people forget this a lot of the time. And another used the exclamatory, "the pain of maintenance," to express their commitment and exhaustion.
Mm-hmm. People working in the field view it through the lens of care, don't they?
Yeah. One informant used the term ecological in regard to how floss or open source as an infrastructure needs to exist with long-term functionality so that it can be sustained by others. And this is backed up by another informant who felt that open source is made of people and that putting the human back into tech is crucial because humans are the ones who enact care.
Beautiful. We try to walk the talk ourselves and use as much open source tech as possible. We collaborate in Proton Docs, which is an alternative to Google Docs, focusing on privacy, transparency, and open source technologies, even though we pay for it. The podcasts are edited in Audacity, free for everybody to download. We communicate via the non-profit and encrypted messaging app Signal, as opposed to the vast majority in Europe using either Facebook, WhatsApp, or Messenger, with their data located on Meta servers and metadata exposed. This is just to show that open source tech really is a realistic alternative to big tech services that works and is safe and secure. Renee, universities in Denmark are using Microsoft, right? It is a closed silo. What are some of the alternatives?
I think I should mention Nextcloud, which I use on two European projects I'm involved with. One is the openwebsearch.eu, which has built an open index of the web. And the other is the NGI search project, where I worked as a postdoc. So Nextcloud is fully open source, and it's for content collaboration. And this is where teams can access, share, and edit documents. There's chat and participatory video calls, and you can manage mail and calendar and projects across mobile, desktop, and web interfaces. And besides people with small businesses, I think all EU universities and governments need to start shifting away from big tech.
I agree so much. What do open source and white hacker values have in common? I mean, is it challenging copyright? What is the story then with licenses?
Yeah, this is a long discussion, but what I learned from the informants was that it came down to framing difference through intellectual property rights. So OSS, open source software, was a protection for shared ownership of the thing, and you maintained it because you were part of that ownership. And one put it this way, non-permissive licenses are the favorite word of businesses. However, software that is not open source is doomed from the get-go. If things are made public, there stands a chance. But if it is considered IP, so intellectual property, then no way. And this was echoed by another informant when describing Silicon Valley big tech, which claims responsibility. And they said, which means they think they can make money without doing anything. They also said that Amazon Web Services is a multi-billion dollar company built on open source, yet has a permissive license. They take it, meaning the code, and they make it proprietary, and therefore they are a bad company. It is extractive capitalism. If you want it back, it will cost you 10 euros a month.
Renee, let's round off with a conclusion of why is open source important for our democracy?
I think it revolves around the interplay between the structural and functional aspects of FOSS and open source and when it is considered an open infrastructure, which might be the same on the technical level, but on an ethical level, it's a completely different discussion, as I learned. So besides openness and politics, it is about organizational forms of governance, as with the statements, FLOSS is a commons, because infrastructure is software and lines of commands with hyperscalability. And in this way, it is always collectivized. And this echoes another informant statement that code is knowledge and expressed how FLOSS or open source is an open knowledge infrastructure by defining it as a center of learning. So open source to them is a university and brought into the community for better or worse. Because in the long run, FOSS or open source consists of people who enact care. And this is articulated by another informant who said that it is an infrastructure of care that cares about the computational infrastructure. So open source software is then an open infrastructure that is essential for society as it enables participation. Yet it should be society regulating access to FOSS infrastructures, not corporations. So open source is then revealed as an open infrastructure reflecting not only a technology, but human activity and as an entanglement of knowledge, society, and politics.
Thank you very much. Open Source Democracy is a research and communication project about why open source is important for democracy, the ethics and values of European alternatives to big tech. It is funded by Carlsberg Minilegate. You'll find it all on dataethics.eu/open-source. The music is made by Joytown.